That one really caught me by surprise. Wow. I feel like I should be embarrassed. I got to start all over again. So let's pretend that didn't happen. First in family, what is going on? It's a Friday. And unlike the last couple of weeks, it's actually the right day for a Q&A. So give it up to life and everything for making that happen for us. I'm gonna apologize in advance right now because I got some water in my ear, and I don't know, man. I sound all kinds of funky. It's making it gonna make this a little awkward for me. But
It's
what's
gonna
new,
be
right?
yelling even more than normal.
What's new? When am I not awkward? Oh, I am peeking. So, Ann and I decided to drop everything we were doing and just say, you know what? Today is the day. Instead of waiting for someday, one day, tomorrow, what is it? Don't wait. What is it about
Why?
stop making it one day and make it day one? Whatever those cool motivational things are, we just decided to say, fuck it, and we wanted to go swimming. So we went to the beach and went swimming, and I got some water in my ear
Go
canals.
get a Q-tip.
It's
What? Ow.
not like a drop of water sitting there, the Q-tip's gonna get out. It's in there. So
This is how ear infections start.
it's throwing off my equilibriums and my voluminousness. So if I'm yelling, turn your volume down, fam. That's all I got for you. So Ian's here. He was quick to pre-game
You
his
were
name,
ready.
his face. He's ready. Stephanie's here. Tom is here. What's up, my man? How are you? Facebook user.
Who is this?
I don't know who you are, so I don't know how to answer this. So let's get this figured out.
This has got to be the same person.
Yeah, and that's
So
never, ever, ever going to happen. Ever once, never.
the links expire, guys. So if your link is not working, which this person is not, click the link so that we can see your bubble, or just put a dash in your name.
And if I responded to you in a manner with which you don't prefer, it's because I don't know who you are, so I don't know if I can be stiff with you or I got to be sensitive with you.
We got a lot. Here's another Facebook user.
FBU, what's up? FBU
Hey,
again.
it's
All
Rob. Okay,
right.
there you go.
Rob, click the link and I can be stiff with you. No, that's never gonna effing happen. She's never gonna choke me, dude.
It's never gonna happen.
Never. It's just not. We got too far of a gap in training ages. And if you do jiu-jitsu, do you? You should know that. So, there we go.
Yes,
Fired up.
never gonna happen. Listen,
Fired up.
nope. I'm a one stripe blue belt. He's a one stripe brown belt. Never gonna happen. And he's got a lot of weight on me, so no. Nah.
So, jiu-jitsu being the gentle art that equalizes size and strength, anyone that's done jiu-jitsu knows that's bullshit when it comes to comparing size and strength and equal skill. So, jiu-jitsu is fantastic at letting a smaller, more skilled opponent take down a heavier, larger, stronger, more athletic opponent. But once skills start equating, the stronger, more athletic opponent is going to be able to apply their skill with savagery that the smaller opponent is not going to be able to do. So it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. That doesn't mean that we can't be rolling one day and she can't catch me, but that would be because we're not doing tournament rolls. Because I'm not going to let her catch me if we're doing tournament rolls, if you're picking up what I'm putting down. Coach Kim is here. Coach Kim knows how to click the link. That's how we know who you are. So, do I pronounce that like
Is it
Ohio?
like the state? Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
OH. Coach Amy's not here, or else she'd back
Have to
me
let
up.
she would.
Good morning in Japanese. It's morning here. Good morning to you. Yeah, I can't F Facebook users, y'all gonna have to click the link. It's just too much to try to keep track of who's there's like eight of you in here now, or you're talking to yourself, which is odd. Dump hydrogen peroxide in that ear. That sounds about right. and let it sit, then dump it. Oh, tubes three times. Yeah. Ooh. It's not, I don't think it's that bad, but whatever. Like, that's how gangrene sets in, right?
You know what's funny is I jump up and down sideways. Like, I used to do it after I get out of the pool because I used to swim.
You know.
So you get out and you just jump up and down and it gets the water out of your ear.
It's not that bad as how a lot of bad things happen. there we go. Coach Kim knows what's up.
Okay.
Yeah, but you could probably throw me. Ian says, I got a black belt in judo. I ain't going to try to choke out Jonathan. Ain't happening. BJJ past purple scares the fuck out of me. Yeah, you know, man.
Ooh, we got some killers that are...
the Niwaza aspect of judo got removed a lot when they really focused on the sport aspect of it. And that's where Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu took a lot of it from. You get dumped on your head, man. It's kind of hard to whatever. So those judo guys you got to watch out for. Rob, the link is in the description. So you'll find the link in several places. It's in the giant thing like, hey, we're going live tonight. It says click this so we can see who you are. And right on the video itself right here, you may have to click out and go back in. But it says click here. And approve so we can show your comments on screen. The link is i.amfirst.in/showme. And so if you do that, we can show you. And it just makes it a little bit easier for us to engage in the chattery. Kristen Floyd is here. Went back and clicked the link. This looks so different and great.
This is the new deal.
It's been a long time since you've been on a live. So thank you for playing along because we can see who you be. And it really helps out with that.
Yeah, this is the first time. Yeah, you've probably been in here with the new setup. New camera, new lights. Jonathan got a bunch of new toys, new program.
You know, I figure, what else am I going to do?
Time to stop looking like we're like, you know, right. Orange-washed.
Orange-washed. Fuzzy. From like we put like, what is that stuff the kids were using for a while? It works, the saran wrap Vaseline. Putting that over the lens of a 1982 flip phone. And trying to go live for you guys. So we're stepping it up a little bit, trying to. So that's all I got to say about it, too.
Very cool.
I'm glad you approved, fam. Kind of a loose one a little bit tonight. We got a couple questions in here we want to jam on. I don't see Jillian yet, and she asked a question that I know was important for her. So we'll give her a second or three to come in. But if not, we're just gonna keep rolling on this thing. If you guys have any questions, hang out for the free-for-all. We'll get them in. If you ask them early, I request you put a little cue in front of it. That's in the comment thing, too, because I've got this neat little search function. I can just mouse over here, and I can search where I'm seeing everybody's comments, and that helps me find them later because I like to forget. That's what we're going to do. We're going to answer some questions. We're going to have some fun, so thanks for joining us. So, Jillian, if you're here... It's time for your question. If you're watching on the replay, catch it on that replay. Catch it on that Finn Live. So Jillian asked us a question, which I thought was a pretty interesting one, a pretty good one. And that's, how do you support each other as a power couple with nutrition? I'm calling this how-to power couple. But she says, my boyfriend and I are looking for tangible ways to support each other with food, tracking, exercise, etc., as a first in nutrition power couple. And I feel confident that we've got some good background here, some tangible info.
We've got some answers. I'm not sure that they're going to be good ones.
It's like any other answer. It may not apply to everybody because everybody's situation is unique, but we definitely know how we've supported one another over the last 7 years of this journey through those ups and downs that life and coupledom will throw at you. So I definitely feel like we can jam on this one. Coach Tasha is here. What is up, Coach? And Steve Bogle is here watching from Station 42. Driving that heavy, bro. Driving that heavy, stealing that money. I'm happy
rough
for you.
Life.
So how do you support each other as a power couple with nutrition? For us, how do we not, right?
We're looking for tangible ways here.
Yeah.
Too, so you know.
So the first thing is that keyword, that support, right? To me, that's everything. That is literally like your support structure. So I think the biggest thing, the biggest tangible thing that I can offer is don't be a dick and try and derail your partner. And that sounds ridiculous, right? But I know for a fact, plenty of people have had their partners try to derail them. And even power couples in this group, one member will be killing it, the other one will be douche clowning, and they will literally drag them down. They will literally do all the stuff that a can't you just do this? Oh, why you're so serious on your numbers? And they'll whatever. So I think the biggest thing you can do to ever support someone is not intentionally sabotage them. If you're a couple and you've explained your whys to one another and you know why it's important for you guys to do it, then that should be it, right? Now we know we're working together, or we're working towards a common good, or at least you're working towards your good and I'm working towards my good. And if I decide that I want a ding-dong, I want to touch the stove and get burned, I shouldn't make you feel guilty if you don't want to. I should support your decisions to choose you and to put yourself first, even if I'm not. And so that kills me when I read check-ins, when I hear from coaches, when we talk about it in our team chat, or I see coaches, because we typically, I would say 99% of the time, split couples with coaches. Do you coach any couples?
Not anymore.
Together?
Not anymore.
I coach, I think, two couples together. That's because they've been OGs for forever. But we try to split couples. So the safe space, right? So you can say what you want and not worry about it. You don't have to worry about your coach picking a favorite or listening to a side or whatever. But so when I collect this information, because if you guys aren't aware, we all work together. We all know everything that's going on with everybody. And I hear that a member of the family is having problems with a spouse or a non-supportive partner, it breaks my heart, but it breaks it times 10 when they're in the group. Yeah. And I know they're in the group, and I know they're dragging their partners down. Man, that messes me up, because, you know, we should want to do better for our partners. We should want to be supportive. So the most tangible piece of advice I can give to support each other as a power couple is to actually support one another. And that can look like different things for everybody. It could be emotional support. It could be physical support. It could be cooking a meal. It could be eating something maybe you don't necessarily want in the moment because it's there, because it's easy on your partner. It could be relinquishing control of where you go to eat. If your partner's in a deficit and you're not, maybe you need to pay attention to their needs a little bit more than yours right now. So I think not intentionally sabotaging somebody. Again, it sounds so silly, but I know for a fact that there are members out there doing it. And I think that's the biggest thing. What do you got?
Yeah, and side note, on the sabotaging thing, maybe don't ever accuse your partner of sabotaging either unless you have proof that they are.
Stop it.
Because this one almost killed his...
Everybody knows this story.
Of getting helped with food.
Everybody's heard this story.
When I got accused of sabotage.
We're talking about supportive things here.
There are things you can do, little things, you know, but the question is almost like, what do you do to be in a good relationship? You know, like it's kind of the same thing. Like, what does your partner need? I don't know. You ever read the Five Love Languages? I don't know. What does your partner need? Does your partner need to be told, hey, babe, you look hot today. You look awesome. Do they need touch? Do they need you to cook their meals? Do they need you to just say thank you? Well, what do they need, you know? So, yeah, Jonathan mentioned a lot of little things that you can do, and that's basically it. I mean, hey, you know your significant other loves a certain meal. Maybe you don't love it. Maybe you can't make it fit. Maybe you cook it for them anyway because they can make it fit, and you eat whatever you need to eat to fit your goals. You know, sometimes it's about letting go of what you feel you need to give them what they need, because you're going to hit different patches. You're probably both not going to be in the same place at the same time. Maybe one of you is going through some stress and having a hard time struggling with numbers. Maybe that's not the best time to be like, hey, let's go out and eat all the things. Let's take you to a restaurant where I know that you commonly overeat. or go out and drink too much alcohol or go make bad decisions. So this is very much like any other form of relationship. You know, what does your partner need? What can you do to help them stay on track? And yeah, don't... The worst thing we see is sabotaging your partner. And it's always you hating on yourself and taking it out on them. And that sucks. Don't do that. If you're struggling, please don't drag your partner down with you. Maybe talk to them about how you're struggling and maybe they can help you and pull you back up. But that's the worst, man.
We've seen people that were killing it in the family get dragged down by unsupportive partners. Partners in the family, partners out of the family, end up leaving the family, end up putting on significant amounts of weight for numerous reasons. Partner jealous, partner didn't want to commit to themselves, partner didn't think it was necessary, whatever. And we just see like people set themselves back so far. And it's always heartbreaking to see that. And it's not necessary. You know, when it comes to actual tangible ways to support each other, we'll just go through like some little baby step type of things. Because like you said, support's going to mean so many things to so many different people. But how do you support each other with food? I think Ann touched on a lot of good stuff. When one is in a deficit and the other one isn't, maybe don't rub it in their face that you've got all this food. Maybe don't eat their favorite foods in front of them when you know that they can't. Maybe... You know, not saying you have to go in a closet and hide, but maybe you have to go in a closet and hide. You know, maybe it's time for you to adult a little bit more and eat more similar meals with them and then find your treats on the backside of things. You know, maybe it's time to do things their way, you know, in terms of, you know, I don't know. Maybe your favorite food is X, Y, or Z, and it's not their favorite food. If they're in a stressful period, if they've got a lot going on, maybe you cater more to their needs. You know, there's a lot of stuff I like. I don't know, like mac and cheese and dino nuggets that maybe Ann can't always fit or can't always eat. So I'm totally okay with not having those things if it is a negative to her. No amount of food, you know, no particular food, no type of food or whatever is worth me putting untoward stress on my partner. That's support, right? So if she has to eat egg whites, make me more fucking egg whites. I'm okay with that. Does that happen that often? No. But if it ever did, I'm totally fine with it. Because again, it's support.
So, and there's the flip side to that on my side. He doesn't have to have it if it causes me stress. I make it for him. So yeah, I make that food, I handle that food, I cook that food, and I choose not to go head first into his giant bowl of mac and cheese just because I can't make it. I choose not to fit it into my day, right? I'm not gonna give up my entire day's worth of food for a bowl of mac and cheese. But I don't mind making it for him, even if I'm not able to enjoy it, because that's what he likes. That's what keeps him happy. That's supporting him from my side of things. So it goes both ways.
That's the balance. You know, and I think that's where that whole support thing comes in, is understanding that there's a greater good that people are working towards. And the last thing you want to do when someone's working towards something good is be a prick and make it harder for them. And because I will eat egg whites alongside of her, and I've done it, she's much more likely to make me mac and cheese while she eats her egg whites. And that's because there's a mutual level of respect there. Establishing that, not through your words, but through your actions, is huge. It's very easy to say, I'm cool with whatever, and then bitch and not be cool with whatever, right? So when it comes to food, I think going out of your way to be attentive to what your partner enjoys, to what phase they're in, and to what mental state they're in at the time really helps. Man, there are plenty of times when, you know, we'd love to go out for X, Y, or Z, and it's just not the right call. Like, oh man, you know, you're in a deficit right now, we can't go out and get large pizzas? No, we can't. That's okay. I'm not gonna request that. I'm not gonna make these moves. I'm not gonna try to set up a meetup.
Well, and we were supposed to go to, actually, we're supposed to go to Texas Day Brazil with his parents last year, probably around my birthday time, somewhere in there. We were supposed to go to Texas with them, the Brazilian steakhouse, right? And I was in a deficit, and I kind of nudged him because he goes, oh, my parents want to go to Texas next week or whatever. And I said, okay, well, I said, I'm in a deficit. It's cool. I said, I'll save all my calories. You know, I was just going to go and have meat and be fine or whatever. He shifted the date for Texas so that I wouldn't have to be in a deficit. So am I willing to go do that? Yeah. Is he willing to give it up for a week or two and move the date? Yeah.
Absolutely.
You both got to compromise.
You know, and the thing is, too, is understand that at no point in any relationship will you ever be your partner. I guess I can't say that with absolute certainty. I guess there's always a possibility where you and your partner will be the exact same size, exact same phase, exact same calories, macronutrients. It's possible. It is highly unlikely that you will ever be your partner. And that's huge, because when we started dating and we started going out, it was, hey, listen, let's go out for dinner and we'll split this and we'll split that and we'll share this and we'll share that and let's split this dessert and let's split this appetizer and let's split these two entrees so we each get half and half. But we're not the same, right? So neither of us, I mean, never once should I expect her to eat 50% down the middle and eat the same meals that I eat. We're not the same human.
And I will. I shouldn't. But I totally will. I totally did when
so,
we went out.
So, like, when you're going out, understand that you may pick a restaurant that one of you can easily afford, but the other one may never be able to. And, you know, man, we could stretch that out. Let's look at Coach PJ, who's, you know, 6'4", you know, a lean 220-pound dude, taking his wife out. Yeah, PJ can sit down and he can plan for an entire Hungry Howie's pizza. His wife will never be able to. Never once in her life will she be able to do that. And be on a plan. She could do it. So he can't get butt hurt if she doesn't want to go eat large pizzas with him. If he wants to support her. And maybe if she's super stressed out in the middle of a deficit, tough times with work, maybe you shouldn't eat that large pizza in front of her. You know, maybe you should be respectful in that regard. Coach Amy loves the Nutella milkshake from Steak and Shake. After tracking her food, she realizes that never once is it a responsible decision, or can she, most of the time, fit in a Nutella milkshake and hit her goals, especially not when she's trying to hit her macronutrients. So it would not be a supportive gesture for Nate, her husband, to bring her one. Hey, babe, I got one. I got you one. That's not how you support your partner, right? So we need to understand that some things that are okay for one of us may never be okay with the other if we want to support their goals. And we have to find ways to accept that ourselves and reconcile it and find ways to enjoy them without our partner. If I really want a Nutella milkshake and I'm hanging out with Coach Amy, I'm not going to sit down and drink it in front of her. I'm probably going to wait till she does something else and I'll get it on my own. Because that's being supportive. Now, if she tells me, Jonathan, I love you more than these Nutella milkshakes, here, drink one in front of me, it's okay, I'll probably think I'm getting set up. But that's a different scenario, and that's that two-way street we're talking about.
I know you asked about exercise as well. This is going to be, again, depending on what you guys do as a couple, what you do individually. Do you work out together? Do you not work out together? I don't know. Do you drive together to the gym? So we happen to work out together most days in the same gym, right? I don't do his workout. He doesn't do mine because they're set up for us individually. But kind of like food, some days one person is going to want to do it, and some days the other person may be a little grumpy about what they got to do. I found that if you are the one that wants to work out and you're excited about exercise and you know that your partner wants to do it because they enjoy the results they get from it, if you take the initiative and take the first step and go and start moving towards training, if I go to the gym and go downstairs, he is probably 99% more likely to come down there and start his workout and feel better because of it. So support for us looks a little different than you think. Like, I'm not going to set out your clothes and throw them in your face and go, hey, change, it's time to go work out, because that doesn't go well with the grumpy face,
right?
Wouldn't go well with me. So I don't drag him to the gym. But maybe if I put my clothes on and go down there and start, he'll come down. So finding out what your partner needs with exercise is going to be a good thing. Do you guys already have something you enjoy? Or is there something you want to do as a couple? We know a couple in the group, in the family actually, who paddle boards. Karen and Gary like to paddle board. Gary fishes. It's cool. That's activity. They're getting activity and together doing something as a couple and supporting each other because they both enjoy it. So kind of side, you know, it kind of depends on what you want to do together. We do jiu-jitsu. One of us has to get in that car, because if not, we're not going. So whoever's having the better day and really is excited about it will go and get the car, and the other one will follow. So that's our version of support with training.
This is exactly where I'm going, because I'm going to take another approach, and Meg just dropped in on this one. And Meg said, oh God, I don't work out with my husband. He goes to BJJ and then does a photo shoot on a bale of hay for some unknown reason. I saw that post that you shared, and I was clueless too, because never once have I done a bale of hay photo shoot after BJJ. But what I'm going to say is this, just like we talked about with the food thing, sometimes being supportive when it comes to exercise or anything is being willing to accept your differences. And that's okay too, celebrate those things. Not everyone has the dynamic that we have, where literally attached at the hip. Not because, you know, she's jealous of me and afraid I'm gonna use these abs to run off with all these younger hot models.
Oh, ain't nobody gonna handle
the younger models. It's because we enjoy the same shit. Like, we enjoy doing the same stuff. So it's not like I'm afraid to let her out of my sight. Amy, you know I said take her all the time. It's not like I'm afraid to let her out of sight, so we have to be like this. Neither of us are that controlling kind of whatever. We enjoy the same stuff, and we love being around each other. But not every couple is that way. So maybe you like to lift. If your partner doesn't, find out what they do enjoy and support them in doing it. Because it doesn't have to be your shit. It doesn't have to be your large pizza. It can be her egg whites. It can be her large pizza. And it can be your tuna and twigs, if that's the phase you're in. We've worked out at the same gym since we started dating. I was powerlifting at the time. She was bodybuilding. Then she moved into CrossFit. Then we both moved into hybrid training, strength and endurance. And now we've had the same coach for the last 4 years now. And our paths have diverted in terms of the exercises we do, but we work out in the same location, the same proximity. We enjoy the same activities. We do the same sport. We do jiu-jitsu. We do a lot together. But if she said, hey, I'd like to go do X, and X didn't interest me, I would support her in doing it. I can't imagine her coming up with something that I wouldn't want to do. If she's like, hey, I want to do acro yoga, I'd be like, hell yeah, let's do it. Or, hey, I want to go do the silk thing, you know, the aerial silks. I'd be like, let's go do it. You know, I can't imagine there being something that she'd want to do that I wouldn't. But if there was, I'd support her in doing it. If it's positive, go do it. Let me do my thing, like jiu-jitsu was supposed to be. But she got in on it and she loves it. And like, I would say 90% of the time, we are each other's partner. We drill together. We do the techniques together. We roll at least one round together. Yeah. We do jiu-jitsu together, and we love it. There's not too many other people that I would rather do technique with that doesn't have a black belt around their waist than my wife, because she knows what she's doing. I get to teach her my way. I always say, if you're gonna put me with an idiot, you know, which is anybody, you know, white belt, blue belt, whatever it is, if you're gonna put me with an idiot, put me with my idiot, because then I know when I put the work into her, she's going to listen, she's going to pay attention, and she's going to apply it, and that makes for a better training partner for me. Like, we work really well together. But if she was into golf, I got to tell you, I probably wouldn't go do it with her. I would say, sweetheart, that's fantastic. Go play them 18 holes. I'm going to sit on the couch as Xbox controller because that is way more riveting to me than swinging. So understand that being supportive of a partner doesn't necessarily mean doing the same thing. It can very much mean finding commonality. Maybe you lift, maybe they run, maybe you guys both can ruck, maybe you guys both can hike, maybe you guys both can ride bikes together, maybe you guys both can paddleboard.
Or maybe you just sit down and eat lunch after you both go and do your separate workouts.
Well, you know, I mean, that's it too. Maybe you can go to the same location, do totally different modalities. That's fine. But I think being supportive is understanding that we know in First In that while we're all on the same path towards improving, we're all taking different directions and different steps and all in different places. And that's what makes it so awesome. So supporting each other understands you guys may be in totally different places, have totally different, not even just directions or maps to get to the next step, but methods of transportation. You know, one of you guys could be, you know, in a puddle jumper landing your plane on bodies of water, and the next guy could be, you know, I don't know, riding a tricycle. You know, it doesn't matter. The point is, as long as you're moving forward, support each other in that sort of kind of positive locomotion. And I think that's the biggest takeaway. When it comes to tracking, again, I think a lot of this thing comes down to think of the least supportive thing you can do. Don't do that, right? Like, it was funny, I never thought about it, but one of our members commented on a post I made about make sure the metrics that you're using for, or some metrics for tracking progress are more meaningful than others, especially for people that can't separate their feels from the facts. And she goes, you mean like taking food off the scale to get the right weight, but then putting that food in your mouth instead of putting it in the container? You know, when it comes to like helping with tracking, be helpful when it comes to tracking. You know, don't encourage somebody to lick the spoon if they didn't negative weigh it. You know, don't encourage somebody that, oh, one more bite won't hurt you. Maybe you're right, maybe it won't, but is that positive? Is that helping them? Is that raising them up? The flip side of that would be if you notice somebody's got some really stressful kind of crazy patterns about food, maybe try to talk to them about that too. I really think being supportive is basically just the opposite of being a dick. Don't do that. And when it comes to food and supporting each other with that, we're not that way. There have been a couple times when I have thought Anne was taking training to a degree of seriousness that I didn't think was appropriate. And I said, hey, we should talk about this. We need to look at this. Are you really making the decisions that are best for you? But it was out of support. It wasn't out of, you know, you're looking more jacked than I am, we can't have that. It was literally like, hey man, I think maybe this mindset isn't really where you want to be. What do you think about that? Do you think you're making the best decisions? We're able to have those conversations. Probably because I did accuse her one time of sabotaging me, but you don't want to hear that story.
We've heard that story several times, and he only ever accused me just once because I told him, listen, if I'm going to sabotage you, I'm going to do it big.
Won't be
it's going to be big. There will be no question what I have done.
Won't be questioned.
No. Oh, I'm going to load you up.
You know, when it comes to us specifically, and this doesn't mean it applies to everybody, how do we support each other with food? Any way we can. What do you want to eat? Where do you want to go? Does this work? Can we go here? Hey, we're supposed to meet so-and-so this weekend at Disney. What can you fit in? Do you want to fit Dole Whip in? Do you care? The same way we support each other anywhere else. You know, does this work for you? Does this work better? Would you rather have this then? Can you split this tonight? Do you want to push date night to another night so it works with X, Y, or Z, your training better due to however those days are structured? Whatever it is, hey, it's your deficit. Are you cool with me eating this? I'm cool, whatever. When it comes to tracking, everybody knows this. Anne does MyFitnessPal. MyFitnessPal is her FitnessPal. But that's because we have an agreement there. We support one another. She wants to eat different shit all the time.
It is.
Guys, I don't want to put the time into that.
It is way faster. So when Jonathan gives me a list on whatever day it is, Sunday, whatever, Hey, you know what sounds good this week? Chili. Hey, you know what I haven't had in a while? Burgers. We should do tacos. We should go to, okay. So now I have this whole list of things that he would like to do that I should make. Okay. It's so much quicker for me to just do his MyFitnessPal. I log out of mine. I log into his. I do it. It takes 2 minutes. If I have to give him the option of what are you eating and do your MyFitnessPal for it, guys, hours. It would take hours and hours and hours every day. It's not worth it. It's quicker for me.
And that scenario doesn't work for everyone. But, hey, if you're going to ask me what I want to eat every day, it's going to be this for the next 6 weeks. It's not going to change. Are you on board with that? No? Okay. We made that decision a long time ago, right after I left the fire department. Because I was like focused way too much on coaching, focused way too much on growing a business, focusing way too much on other things. And I said, listen, it's too much for me for you to ask me what I want and me to change it and then do this and then change it because of this. It's not that I can't do it. It's that I don't want to. It's that that juice wasn't worth the squeeze. Applying that extra 20, 30 minutes a day to customize all these meals for me wasn't worth the benefit of eating different food. I can eat the same thing every day. I would reduce 3 shakes in 1 meal a day to save time because I'm crazy. I'm the guy that's like, oh, how can I increase the efficiency of this? I know, I'll speed up our shows we watch together. It's date night. Let's speed it up to 1.2%. You know, I'm a little nuts like that, but that's okay. We all have our issues. So for us, that's how we handle our tracking. If she needs me to do something, get something, do whatever, I know how to tear the scale. I know how to measure stuff. I'm more than fine to do it. But that's how we handle that. And how do we handle exercise? We have an understanding that dependent upon the situation, it's all about you doing you. Your goals are your goals. If I'm having a day where I am so consumed by whatever I'm doing at with First In that I'm not going to train, she knows that I don't expect her to work alongside of me just because I'm doing it. It's not that way. It's that this is my choice. This is what I'm going to do. You go work. You go train if that's what you need to do and that's more important to you. Conversely, she's got something going on. She doesn't train. I'll go train. We support each other by not giving the side eye. By not going, oh, it must be nice to go work out while I'm sitting here working, you know. It must be nice to work while I'm working out. We don't do that. You know, like Ann said, a lot of times it takes one of us to go, I'm going to go train. Then the other one goes, you're right, let me get off my butt. I should probably go do it too. We don't want to lift every day. We don't want to train every day. We don't want to track every day. We don't want to do all these things. But you don't have to like what you're doing right now in the moment to love why you're doing it and the outcome it brings. And we're really lucky that we love the outcomes we get, and we especially love the outcomes we get as partners. I love the confidence she has. I love the pride she has in what she can do because of her training, because of her jiu-jitsu, because of her food. I want my wife to feel good about herself. Why the hell would I try to stop her from doing that? That would just make my life miserable. And it's because I love my wife. It's because I love my partner, right? Like, I want her to be happy, and these things make her happy, and these things make her feel good. So, of course, I'm going to support her in those. That's kind of why we did the whole I do thing. So that's why, circling back to before, man, when I see partners that aren't supporting each other, man, I don't get it. You know, we do everything we can to try to help support each other. And I think that makes me, you know, I feel like I chose wisely. You know, when they were handing out the grails, you know, and everybody went for the whatever, man, I chose wisely. I got the one that really had the magic in it. Because I couldn't imagine like taking actions towards making life harder for her and making her feel less happy, you know? And I think that's the biggest thing is like, how can I support you? You know, there's times when I've noticed that she didn't want to work out, and I really didn't want to work out, but I went and did it anyway because I knew how that domino would fall. I knew that if I started, she'd start. So I trained so she would train. And again, you don't have to do that. I'm not saying you do. I'm not saying I've done that every time. But that's an option, right? How can I best help her right now? How can I best help me right now? Can we align those two together? Fantastic. If aligning them together means doing different things, that's fantastic too. That's how we power a couple.
That's what we got.
Yeah, man. It's just the simple fact that, you know, we want each other to win. We are a team. And our team is very similar. We do the same things, you know, so it makes it seem simple on paper. But at the same time, when I go for a 45-minute run and she's lifting, we're doing two totally different things. We're not together. We're not supporting each other. We're not cheering each other on. We're doing two totally separate things, but it's still, hey man, I'm going to go run. Are you going to go lift? Okay, cool. Let's set it up. Let's whatever. And I think that's the biggest thing. So for us, reverse engineer it. You know, if you're looking for ways to support somebody, go, what would be the wrong thing to do right now? Ooh, that. Let's do something else. You know, let's do something else. And I think as long as you just try to make that next right decision, and I think a lot of it's ask. Communicate, you know.
Yeah, that's a lot of it.
If Anne had to eat the same thing every day, and a lot of times she does, she copies and pastes a lot, depending on what phase she's in. But if she had to eat the same thing every day, and it had to be the same thing I wanted to eat every day, she probably wouldn't be nearly as successful as she is. But ask. Maybe your partner wants to eat the same thing every day. They want less whatever. Are you okay with that? Are you willing to give up some diversity? In other words, stop eating a hamburger once a week like I want to do. Are you willing to give up a little bit of that to make their lives easier? And I think we're both willing to do whatever it takes to not make the difficult stuff any harder than it has to be. And I think that's the key to supporting somebody. So I beat this dead horse all night.
You have.
But.
You said something cool, though. What's right for me? What's right for you? How do we figure out how to put those two together and make them work? Because that's this whole conversation in a nutshell.
You know, and I think it comes to anything. You know, today we went to the Cairo. Ann went and sat with me because she wasn't getting adjusted while I got wrenched on. And then we were thinking about going to the beach. There's a beach we go to out over by our Cairo. And we play this game like no one wants to say they don't want to go in case the other person wants to go. Because if you say you don't want to go and then the other person wants to go, well, are they dragging you along and whatever? So we both kind of like are very sensitive about that, especially when you don't care, right? We always say if it's not a hell yes, it's a hard no. But if you're 50-50, it's a tip, right? So today I was in that mood where I really thought she wanted to go to the beach. And I was like, I'm just not saying shit. Because the past couple weeks we've gone, we've driven out to the beach, and I'm like, some mosquitoes, it's going to rain, it's crowded. Let's just not. You know, we went this morning, it's cool. Let's just get back and get to work, right? And so today I was like, nah, it's been too long. We haven't gone and done the thing where we go to the beach and I bring my iPad and I read. You know, she sleeps. But different vibe, right? So we're leaving the chiropractor and she starts the, well, is it a this? And I just said, listen. I said, don't go for me. I said, I'm going for you. I said, it's not a negative if we go for me, but I am so dead down the middle, I can't whatever. And then I could pick it up. Well, if we're going to just drive out there, no. I said, do you just want to go get tacos and skip it and just not even worry about it? Because what we do every week is we drive all the way out to it.
Yeah.
We sit and go, not today, and we leave. But that like 40 minutes of extra can't be at work. Now, I'm on the phone doing work anyway. But that time is like kind of like decompression. It's not ever wasted time. But I was like, you know what? Let's just go. Fine. You know, sometimes you have to have the honest conversation. Because if you're both so willing to try to do things to make the other person happy, there's a great chance neither of you are being honest about it. And we run into that too, because we both want the other one to be happy. So that can be too supportive, I guess, or it can be supportive to the point that it's no longer supportive. You're not actually providing a win. So we want to make sure that when we're doing something positive, it results in a net positive. That's like I always say, self-care is not the same thing as self-pity. It's not the same thing as self-indulgence. It actually should lead to a net positive. And sometimes when you're trying to be supportive, you can both be trying to, a little bit too much. So yeah. Just my little 2 cents from today.
So we miss comments or where?
We miss so many comments, I'm not scrolling back. Because nothing stood out anything.
There were no questions.
Yeah, no questions. Okay. And it was just kind of like, nothing.
Well, Bobby's here.
So Bobby is here. What's going on?
Ian.
And Ian's
yeah.
In.
Yeah, joint ops. That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah. I mean, and that's it for everybody. It's like we go to the beach every day.
We walk across the street lives, in the morning.
Every morning. So, no. Sometimes it's not the best thing for us. So you're correct. It is perception. So it's 22 hours for me to go see a mountain. So if I went to see a mountain, I'd probably go see that mountain for that time I was there. But if I lived there, I probably wouldn't care if I missed that mountain that day. So you are absolutely correct. But at the same token, that's why we live where we live. So we have that luxury. It's like going to the happiest place on earth. When Ann and I go to Disney, if it's up to us, it's to ride the 2 rides, 3 rides on our Fast Pass, and then we're going back somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because we've been there enough times. Somebody else may want to come and beat the lines open to the park and stay there for 14 hours and watch the fireworks. That sounds dreadful to me.
Which are back, by the way. Fireworks back.
Dreadful. Because I've done it.
I don't ever make him stay. Here you go. Here's your example right here. As much as I would hate driving home late or even staying in a hotel that night, I would stay in the park to watch fireworks. I would never make him stay late enough to see fireworks.
And I have stayed for many a fireworks show that I'm like, oh, boom, boom. Ears are going to be ringing. This is great. Because she loves them. We don't go to every fireworks show. We don't miss every fireworks show. It's balance. Boom. Fireworks.
Boom. I wish I had a firework emoji.
Right. So I don't know if Kelly's still here, but we're going to get into Kelly's question now. And this is going to be a good one. So I'm going to try to breeze through this one, but that's not going to happen.
Some of it's going to get a little long, but Kelly, can I just tell you, first of all, I like that you limited Jonathan's choices with a number.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen.
I love it.
It's not going to happen. It's a good try, but it's not going to happen. So Kelly asks, she says, hey, I have a question along the lines of your newest release. And what she's talking about is in the member portal, we just released a Finn Faves section, which has links to all the stuff that we love and that members love. And it's going to be this ever-growing, evolving repository of things we can get delivered to our house from Amazon, because that's the best thing ever.
Love Amazon.
You click it, and some of you in major metropolitan areas can have it same day, yeah, within an hour, without even a drone dropping it off. So it's super cool. So she asked, along the lines of your newest release, what are your favorite books in the following categories, maybe top three? And why are those books your favorites? So we're going to break these categories down. She asked about life, nutrition, strength in athletes, and fiction. And what I mentioned to Kelly, Kelly's here. She said, I'm here, by the way.
Oh, good.
What I mentioned to Kelly was, you too noticed that the library was very slim in there. And we'll work on building that out. But when it comes to books, I love books. Like the first hour of every day for me is spent reading. It's my personal development time. It's the time when I come up with my ideas. It's a time when I learn. It's a time when I consult people who have came before me, so I don't have to reinvent the wheel. And it's when I expand, basically everything. I just read a quote recently, and it was pretty funny. It says, "Not all readers are leaders, but all leaders are readers." And I was like, you know, I feel that in my soul, because the desire to want to do it all and know it all is pervasive. If you ever thought like, man, I wish I knew that, you're not alone, right? But the time frame we have to learn things, especially on our own, is very limited, right? So when Tesla wanted to make the Tesla, if they had to start over from reinventing the wheel, like the round thing from which it rolls on, they probably wouldn't have gotten much further than the guy that invented the wheel did, right? So it goes back to that Newton quote where Newton, guy that invented calculus like as a teenager, where Newton says, "If I have seen further than others, it is because I have stood on the shoulders of giants." And what he's referring to there is reading. The fact that we have limitless access to the entire world's collective repository of knowledge on something like this is pretty nuts. And if we're not taking advantage of that, I think we're doing ourselves a disservice, right? That's how I feel about reading. If you don't, that's cool. I won't yuck your yum. You do you. But that is, I'm so passionate about it. It's the first thing I do every day, because it is the most important thing I can do during that day is read. It's also the last thing I do every night before I go to sleep for two different reasons. So when you ask me what are my favorite books, I can't even begin to start with that, because there's just so many. There's just so many. So this will not be short. Some answers will be short because they're not things I read about. But let's just dive on in, right? Let's just dive on in. These are in no particular order. I'm more than happy to jam on any of these with anybody, anytime. When I said, like I've literally considered like starting a book club, I've tried to figure out how I could make it part of First In, or should I do it totally separate, start my own new thing or whatever it is, because I love to read, and I love to talk about books, and she fucking hates it. Because every day I'm like, I read this, I read that, I read this, I read this, reading this, reading that, reading this, today I read, and literally, like, it's like she can't stand it.
It's overload.
And I'm like, dude, who can I talk to? Like who is crazy like me? So, you know, I'm looking at like four different masterminds to try to join so I can talk about books with people that like books. So anyway, let's move into some books. When you say life, to me, my favorite book about life is whatever I'm reading right now. Because that's the one I'm getting the insights from, right? That's the one I'm pulling the quotes from. I've got the iPad doc with the title, and it's got all my gems that I'm getting from it, because I'm going to go back and reference it one day. Maybe. There's 150 of those. I can't tell you the last time I went back and referenced one, but the point is whatever book I'm currently diving into is my current favorite, because that's the one I'm getting those active nuggets from. But when you ask me, like, faves of all time, it's really just going to depend on the period of the phase. But the one that ranks up there, like right off the top of the bat, is Man's Search for Meaning from Viktor Frankl. If you haven't read that book, I suggest you drop everything you're doing right now, turn this live off, and order that. In fact, let's get that book in that repository. Because
that's the perspective you get after that book.
If you're not familiar with it, Viktor Frankl... he basically survived the Holocaust in a concentration camp because, like the Friedrich Nietzsche quote says, for every man who has a big enough why, he can bear any how. He felt his story, his work, his life's work, the manuscript he was working on, was so worth telling that he had to survive. And that's how he made it through when so many others failed. And the perspective he has about having a why, a little bit more resonated with me than Start With Why by Simon Sinek, right? It's just, it's like, damn, dude, I need to really, you know, hit that gut check sometimes, right? When you read the horrors this man with, you know, just endured because he had a big enough reason to get through it, it really lets you know that, man, tracking my food is not that hard, right? Lifting some weights today, I can do it. You know, I can be a little hungry today, right? We can do these things. It's just a great book. So if you haven't read it yet, you should. And I will yuck your yum if you're not going to do it, because it's awesome. Next, when it comes to like life, right? You could take your pick: Slight Edge, Compound Effect, Psycho-Cybernetics. You know, any of these things that like try to teach you that you are in control, to try to push away from learned helplessness. I'm huge fans of that. That show you the power of like you can get a little bit better, you can get a little bit worse. And between one and the other, in the course of a day, it may not be that big of a difference. But over time, it stacks up huge. But the biggest barrier to that is probably yourself. That's why I really like Psycho-Cybernetics, because it talks about this concept of learned helplessness, where, you know, you teach yourself, really, you allow yourself to be chained down by these things. Along those lines, I know everybody is like super into Atomic Habits, James Clear. I think it's a good book, but I actually prefer Tiny Habits by BJ Frog for actionable stuff. Tiny Habits, I changed a lot of things by reading that book, and it's super awesome. Just be careful when you habit stack like I do. You can stack too much. You can stack too much.
Jonathan came out of the bathroom one day, and he was like out of breath. He was sweating. I said, what are you doing? And he goes, I started doing some push-ups. Every time I go to the bathroom, flush the toilet, go do some push-ups.
That's BJ Frog right there.
But it was like, I did a couple push-ups, and then it was, I did 5 push-ups, and 5 Hindu push-ups, and 5 pike push-ups, and I did all this, and then he's doing squats, and he's...
10 Hindu push-ups, 25 push-ups, and then 10 pike push-ups every time I flush a toilet.
And then,
got some shoulder issues, but that's okay. It doesn't matter. Make sure the habits you're cultivating are worthy being a creature of, but I think Tiny Habits is a great book. The Maui habit that he refers to it, you guys may notice that I use the Maui habit every single day of my life. The Maui habit is he wakes up every morning and he says, today is going to be a good day. And he cultivated that habit when he moved to Maui.
Surprise.
But every day he says, today is going to be a good day. When his feet hit the floor, that's what he says to himself. And that habit has changed a lot for me. So I think I am James Clear. You're a cool guy. I love Atomic Habits, but if I had to pick two, I'm picking Tiny Habits. Grit by Angela Duckworth is a great book. The Power of Perseverance. You can do hard things, guys. So it just takes continuing to show up and being able to do them. That was actually gifted to me by a coach, a guy I've known for years. I really like a guy named Steve Tripp. And he sent it to me because he knows I like to read, and that was probably one of the coolest things ever, because it was such a good book. And again, it lets you know. There we go. Meg's a grit fan. Yeah, it was such a great book, and it really is. It's just about the power of perseverance. It's like we always talk about, man. Progression, not perfection. Continue to show up. Continue to do work. What is the quote? I can't even forget it says right now, but the harder I work, the luckier I get. That is it, man. You know, she goes through and she gives actual case studies of people that, you know, worked through and overcame obstacles. And the obstacles that people are overcoming, guys, it'll let you know that some of the things that we face, they're real to us. I'm not saying they aren't, but they can inspire you to understand that you can overcome just about anything. I really like Solve for Happy by Mo Gawdat. name I can't pronounce. He was an engineer for Google. And, you know, unfortunately, his son died traumatically. Not traumatically, he died as a result of a misdiagnosis, an unnecessary death by a team of physicians. And while that is tragic and devastating, he chose not to see it that way. He chose to actually engineer an equation for happiness. And basically it boils down to, it's never the situation, but our expectations of the situation not matching up. And, you know, he gets really, 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 really deep into why he feels that way and why he's, you know, he can't wait to see his son again and he can't wait to whatever. But, you know, he has no reason to believe that his son is in pain anymore. He has no reason to believe whatever. And, man, it's just a powerful read about this guy. Like, you lose sight through the book at points that this guy is literally talking about probably one of the most horrible things a parent could ever do is outlasting and outsurviving their child. And he has found a way to not only change his own life, but the life of his family, but touch the life of so many people. Google messed up when they lost this guy, right? But just a great guy. When it comes to, again, life stuff, you know, whatever speaks to you, right? Whatever speaks your language, man, you can get a lot from Tony Robbins. You can get a lot from who's a guy I can't really stand. I listened to an audiobook and the guy was reading it himself, man. It was a little too woo. I couldn't get behind it, man. I couldn't read it. You can get a lot from a lot of different guys. If you're a little bit on the outside, a little bit whatever, Gary John Bishop. He's the unfuck yourself guy, and he's the what the fuck guy. It just tells you kind of where his philosophy is. I like some of his stuff because imagine reading like a Robbins or reading like a self-help book, and it just being like a little bit more in your face, a little bit more like little let bit. let me slap you with the truth here. I really like his take on things. But anything that kind of, you know, gets you in the mindset where you want to be, you know. I don't know if you guys are aware, but I'm pretty into, you know, overcoming obstacles and not cowering in the face of adversity and doing the hard things. So, you know, it can be Gary John Bishop, it can be, you know, Anthony Robbins, it can be Ryan Holiday if you're into the Stoics. You know, Obstacles Away is a great book. Ryan Holiday was a great marketer. For you guys that don't know that, he cut his teeth in marketing before he started being a Stoic philosopher. You can read the original Marcus Aurelius if you're into meditations. All these things are great. When it comes to a lot of stuff that resonates with me, man, I'm a Jocko guy. I know that's not everybody's bag, and that's okay. But what I like about Jocko or guys like Chris Kyle or Mark Divine is these guys are able to apply global perspectives and global techniques to things based from hard fought, learned lessons. So to me, that resonates. It's walking the walk. It's speaking from experience. A lot of this stuff isn't philosophical. It's not theoretical. It's no cover and move works because we covered and we moved. You know, the dichotomy of leadership presents itself because this is why. So these things, again, it's funny. I was listening to Jocko the other day, and if you guys aren't familiar, Jocko was a Navy SEAL, leader of task force, bruiser, from SEAL Team 3 during the Battle of Ramadi, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan during some of the bloodiest, most brutal combat there was. And he's talking about reading B.H. Liddell, like on a book about indirect methods of attack. And B.H. Liddell, God, I'm getting way off here. But B.H. Liddell was a World War One guy, where World War One, they sent your battalion at the enemy at 8 a.m. and you got crushed and it got wiped out. So at 8:05, they sent another one at the enemy and it got crushed and it got wiped out. And at 8:10, they sent them at the enemy and it got crushed and it got wiped out, right? So B.H. Liddell got blown up twice, then got sent back on the bloodiest day in Battle of Somme in World War One, and got shot three times. And then when he came back, he said, you know what, we got to come up with some different strategies, right? We got to come up with some different strategies. And he was one of the first guys that talked about, from a topographical top down, taking that 10,000 foot approach and looking down at a battlefield and then noticing that the long way around is the shortest way to get to your enemy. Shortest way to win. Because if you go straight at it, try to take that shortcut, you're going to get hammered. And conversely, the shortest way, the shortest path, is the longest way around. And the whole point I bring this up is because Jocko, who has combat experience and business experience, is relating all of these to principles in jiu-jitsu. So the fact that he takes all of these principles from all these different modalities and can find different ways to relate to them is why I appreciate and it resonates with me. That doesn't say that Brené Brown might not resonate more with you. I like her stuff too. But these are books that speak a lot to me of the walk I want to walk and the way I want to lead. Tribe by Sebastian Younger is a great book. That's why I am so into the tribe. That's why I'm so into protecting the family, is because we're wired that way. We are wired to literally, you know, want to thrive with others. And it's just a really powerful book for me. So, man, I could go on life books forever, because whatever book I'm reading is going to be my favorite book on life. So we'll go ahead and skip on that one. So, Kelly, I hope that gave you some ideas.
In the life category.
When it comes to strength in athletes, surprise, I don't read about them. I really don't. The one book I will bring up, I think it's the one book I'll bring up, is The Art of Resilience by Ross Edgley. And it's a life book, right? He has pioneered this field of sports stoicism. Ross Edgley swam around Great Britain, the continent, right? The country. It's not a continent.
Country. Yeah.
The country. He swam around it. Like, feet didn't touch land, off a boat, swam around Great Britain. So when he talks about the art of resilience, he's a very resilient guy. He also did a triathlon that he called a triathlon, where he swam, bike, and ran an Ironman distance triathlon holding a log. Like a giant, it's like a 100-pound log. It's a triathlon. So he's a crazy guy. But he wrote this book called The Art of Resilience. And basically what he said is, you cannot rush. Resiliency, being resilient cannot be rushed, but quitting can. And that's the damn truth, man. Anytime, you know, we get into the are we there yet conversation, whether it's in jiu-jitsu, whether it's with food, whether it's with lifting, it just makes me chuckle. Because asking are we there yet has never once made a journey shorter. But man, it's made you really terrible to be on a road trip with. And you can't rush resiliency. You can't rush the finish line. All you can do is rush quitting. And take it from a guy who swam around Great Britain. There's no rushing that, right? The only way to complete that swim is by one stroke at a time. And we're talking, you know, it's the waters around Great Britain, right? So it's not warm. This isn't a warm swim. So he's got to wear a wetsuit. Wetsuit cutting into his neck. He had to have a duct tape collar, jellyfish hitting his face, stinging all over the place. You know, we're talking about a guy that had to go through tons of obstacles here to make this happen. And, you know, he distills it down into again, sports stoicism. You know, if I just keep swimming one stroke at a time, I'll get through it. So I just thought it was an amazing read, an amazing testament to what people can endure. I've heard Froning's book is good. I would rather, in my opinion, read lessons from tactical athletes. Like I said, whether it's a Chris Kyle, whether it's a Mark Devine, you know, I'm not the biggest Goggins fan. I'm way more into Jocko stuff, because it's all about the team. Goggins is all about himself. And I think everybody that, like, you know, wants the hashtag can't hurt me, because they did a set of curls today, has really no idea what they're saying when they compare it to running Badlands. So, you know, a little bit different, running yourself to rhabdo and kidney failure, making laps around a track. That's a guy who can hashtag can't hurt me, and I won't take that away from him. But I didn't think his book was that powerful. Do you have any athlete books?
I don't. You know, I've read a couple running books just to read them, but I'm not big on athlete books. No, I'm just not. I didn't enjoy them. Unbreakable was pretty good, but other than that,
Born to Run. I mean, I just haven't, you know, I haven't gravitated towards it. You know, I'm sure there are plenty phenomenal athlete books out there, but I've never been a guy that watched sports either. I'd rather go do it, and I'd rather learn from people that went and done it. And I just don't have, I don't know, it's adoration is the wrong word, but I just, like, you know, the reason I know Matt Frazier's name is because everybody says it, but I don't know who that guy is,
no,
right?
I don't
know. Any, people say, hey, do you know this BJJ guy? I'd be like, no, I don't. And they're like, well, you mean you don't know? And, no, man, I don't know that guy. It's just not my thing. Maybe it could be my thing. If anyone's got any great athlete books I should read, I mean, I bet Tyson has a good one. I bet Jordan has a good one.
Sure.
I've read about Jordan, and whew, boy, that guy is not the the happiest, smiley, you know, go-lucky guy everybody thinks the old king was. But yeah, I just haven't, I don't know, it hasn't caught me yet. It hasn't resonated with me yet.
This is not, as far as strength and athletics, it's just, you're not going to learn anything actionable as far as being able to do a sport better or being able to lift better by reading these things. Are there tips and cues and ideas and all this stuff? Yeah. Do I feel like you can actually put them into practice realistically? Probably not by reading them. You probably have to actually go do them and have somebody help you do them. It's just a different kind of...
You can't learn to ride a bike from reading a book. I think it's actually titled the book. And you can't learn to ride a bike from reading a book. You can learn everything about how a bike works, how the mechanics work, how it translates the force of the wheel, and how the cranks vary and creates higher and different cycles by turning it over too many times. You can learn all about that. But until you put the bike on and ride, it's the same thing. I think if you're looking to learn, I don't know, a skill or exercise history or exercise philosophy, there's a lot of programs that you can read for sure. Yeah. I just read a book from Yuri Marmerstein or something on handstands. And his handstand cueing, it actually did improve a little bit of my handstand work. But it was one line where he talked about keeping your hands bent so you have better translation of controlling your weight. Because he philosophically talked about the handstand, standing on your hands is no different than standing on your feet. And that you're just so used to standing on your feet that you don't realize all the balance calculations you're making as you rock forward and rock back. And he said, you don't need to be any stronger. You just have to have better balance. And that's why you need to use your hands. So most people, when they're standing on their feet, your toes are curled a little bit. And that's where the hand positioning came in. Very neat. Very interesting. I'm still not doing handstands like he is.
Yeah. But I mean, I
but that's what I read about strength and athletics for, is I read to get actionable intel, or I read a programming book. Max Shank had a book called Ultimate Athleticism I read because I followed the program. But reading about athletes, I don't know. I'm sure it would be great. I'm sure it would be awesome. I love to read biographical stuff. It just doesn't have that spot in my rotation, and it's not my depth of knowledge.
It's just, if you don't have the understanding of doing it yourself or programming for somebody to do these things, it's just not going to be there. I went through... Juggernaut had a series, Lit FTS had a series. There have been all kinds of series on training guides, breaking down sets and reps for this, for that, for the other, what you're doing, how long rest time recovery should be. At the very end of it, it's basically like, hey, if you have no underlying knowledge of this and have not done it yourself, you probably aren't going to understand this and be able to put it into practice. It's just not. It's reading and it's data and studies and things that they've come up with and found anecdotal evidence for on themselves. But if you've never squatted, I don't expect you to read a training paper on squatting and cueing and form and reps and sets and getting the most out of every, if you've never squatted before.
See, I didn't even read this in that context. I read this and, have you read any books about athletes? Like, I read it as biographical because I've read you know, strength and conditioning manuals before like that, and they definitely don't interest me. You know, it's like, I'm good, man. I'm good. NSCA manual, nah, I'm good. That's okay. TSAC manual, nah, I'm good. It's all right. You know, so I read it literally as like what I want to read about people, you know, and stories and this and that. So that's an interesting perspective.
So when I read about strength and athletes, it's because I'm reading
right
to shore up,
you're
you
reading
know,
to
programming
be a
and
coach. Yeah, absolutely. So two totally different things there. So that, there we go. That's good, right? So yeah, moving right along. I ain't got nothing for you, Kelly. I'm sorry. When it comes to fiction, I do read some of the fictions.
All the fictions.
I do like me some fiction, and that's because I read fiction before I go to sleep. Fiction is what allows me to stop my brain. It's what allows me to get the first in out and get the sleepy mode in and hopefully get some cool dreams. So I read fiction every night before I go to sleep. It's awesome. And it's been cool lately because I don't even know how many books are in this series. I think it's like 13, right? Hold on.
We have a few comments we missed.
Yeah, so Meg says she likes what you're saying about you can't ride a bike, read a book. I agree. And then Kelly says, I do read books on athletes, but I was thinking more along the lines of training others. I'm in the same spot as Anne, reading up to be better at training others and myself. So here's what I'm going to suggest for you there. Who's your coach? Have you been coached and have you been trained? Because that to me is how you become a better coach and a better trainer. And that is become, and to me, the way you do that is by being more coachable and being more receptive to guidance. And I think her programming has increased the most because she's worked under coaches for so long. And she's very coachable, and she's worked with coaches on coaching to whatever. So I don't think reading a book does much. I would consider reading a book when it comes to coaching and training almost where I would consider supplements, right? Like tip of the iceberg stuff. It doesn't mean that they're not good. It just means that, you know, dorsiflex 90 degrees and adduct doesn't mean anything like it does when you could put hands on people. So my suggestion there is reading up to better train yourself and others. I'll come to train myself when it comes to nutrition because I got thoughts there. But when it comes to better training others, I think it is far better to, again, stand on the shoulders of giants and collect that experience. To me, coaching is so different than even programming, right? Anybody can write a program, follow Prilipin's chart, and program in a vacuum. And if the stars align and everything's great, your peaking cycle for the next 12 weeks should look like this, and you'll increase a 17.2% chance on this lift because we live in a fantasy world, right? Coaching is not that. Coaching is, again, meeting someone where they're at and adapting these circumstances and having that kind of like live interaction. And I think the best way to become good at that is by working with really great coaches.
Reading for coaching. Reading to try to become a better coach or a better trainer is supplemental at best. It's who is your coach? Who is your coach that you are working with to become a better athlete and a better coach for others? Because until you have gone through these things, done these things, had to interact with an actual coach who is maybe where you want to be or knows what you want to know or can do what you want to do physically, there's just no understanding in how to handle issues when you coach others. Because, yeah, man, any of my people know, we don't get programs for 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks. We don't do that. Could we set up a plan for 12 weeks? Yes. Is it still going to change every week? Yes, because it's not perfect. You're not in a vacuum. Coaching is based very much like in nutrition off of what happened the week before.
And the caveat to this is that's how we feel about coaching. You can find a lot of coaches that'll give you that 12-week program.
Oh, yeah.
And say follow it or don't. I think you can read up on how to be a better coach, as in disseminating information. That's basic human psychology. I still think you learn most stuff from getting hands-on. That means actually working with people. But if you have a base level of knowledge, again, I think best obtained in person, working, interning, shadowing, hands-on, doing that. I think reading fitness journals and studies and stuff like that, I don't know. I just don't think it really has that big of an impact as much as like practical exercise and application, like the way Anne trains with her coach. So, you know, it's interesting. I don't have any books for you that I would say, oh man, this will change how you program everybody, because it's really just everyone's opinion, right? You can read peer-reviewed literature on sets and reps and hypertrophy and strength endurance and all these things like that, but none of that makes you better at guiding someone else, and none of that makes it better at guiding yourself, because you've got to be able to be objective with that and be able to set like a benchmark up and make sure you're not just, you know, doing whatever. I had a guy that came into F4D the other day, and he sent me a message. He goes, hey man, he goes, had OT, didn't do this, I can only do, you know, one workout, what should I do, lift or this? And I said, I reckon one of those 2 days stands out to you more like you'd want to do it. My gut tells me you'd be better served by doing the other one. And he wrote me back and he was like, you son of a bitch. He's like, you crawled right into my head, because I wanted to do this one because I liked it, because it was in his wheelhouse, because he would feel better doing it. He did the other one. That's something that, you know, that's outside perspective. It's very hard to tell ourselves to do that. So again, it all depends on what you're looking for, right? John Kajimi, just curious, have you read Tools of Titans? I have read Tools of Titans, and I would be remiss if I did not suggest a great book that Mr. Kajimi suggested, The Energy Bus. Man, what a fun read that is.
He's been talking about that lately.
Yep, what a fun read that is. I like The Energy Bus way more than I like Tools of Titans. I read Tools of Titans, and I thought it was okay. I think it's a lot of what Tim Ferriss does, right? It's surface level, sounds real good. There were a lot of cool people interviewed in it. It's been a while since I dove into it. I'll read anything Tim comes out with, just because you have to, right? But nothing left a mark on me. Like it's not in my gold pile on my collection on my iPad. But yeah, I mean, it was good. You know, 4-hour work week. You know, I've read everything except 4-hour body and 4-hour chef. Cause, sorry, Tim. No. but yeah. So Tools of Titans was good. It didn't. I don't recall it like blowing my mind. But I just remember some of the interviews were like, okay, cool, that's neat. I just love that he's able to tap into such a diverse subject matter of experts. And what it did do is it helped me follow a few other guys like Naval Ravikant and, you know, Ramit Sethi and guys like that. So, you know, it's definitely a good read. So talking about training books versus whatever, appreciate the knowledge and insight you guys share. So Meg says, this is what I tell about reading self-help books. They're just a tool. If you really want to fix your shit, you have to get and do the work yourself on it for yourself. No one wants to hear that. You are 100% correct there, in my opinion. I can't say that we're right? But I agree with you 100%. And that's why I kind of went back and said, whatever book resonates with you that gets you to take that action. And that's why I like Tiny Habits, because it felt more actionable to me than Atomic Habits did. But maybe Atomic Habits resonated with you more, right? I probably am willing to bet that Jocko is not going to resonate with everyone here. But if it gets you to do the work, right? If it gets you to learn, like we talked about, grit, that power of perseverance, if it gets you to peel back the layers, not everybody wants to hear unfuck yourself, right? I do. But you know, that's the thing, is whatever it is, man, you know, it's kind of like you said, that whole self-help, that whole whatever, it's only going to work if you help yourself, right? You've got to be willing to do that work, and you've got to be honest. You've got to be able to go, man, this guy's talking to me. I'm the one screwing everything up. It's me. It's my fault. Until you can own things, until you can express that ownership, you read all the books you want, right? You're just literally collecting words at that point.
Yes, you're shouting out energy bus.
Energy bus, right? Energy bus. John, you said read it. I'm reading it right now, man. Hold on.
If you send it, he'll read it.
Hold on, man. Look.
He's got the big yellow title up in there.
Energy bus. Hold on. There, wait, you can't see it. I don't have the auto zoom. There it is. Energy bus. You're going to have to take my word for it. Energy bus. Along with Anna Patterson, Curtis Jackson, the 50 Cent book. I'm reading that too. Hustle Harder. Great book.
That sounds like a good book. He's been telling me about that one lately.
Great book. Yeah, man, you suggested it at the reunion, and I put it in the rotation, and it's really good, man. I think I'm on like rule 4 though. I'm not through all 10 yet, man. I'm reading it, but I like it. I like it a lot. It's a really good book, man. Again, you're the driver of your own bus, fam. It's you. If you're not driving the bus, if you're saying, "Oh man, I'm not in control. I'm not driving the bus," you're voluntarily saying somebody else is. I'm letting Ann drive the bus? Hell no. She can get on my bus, but I'm driving the bus. I'm in charge of the bus. Everything that happens to you, that's you. And that's what Meg said. All these self-help books, they're not going to do shit for you unless you're willing to do the work. You got to do the work, man. You got to go on your gratitude walk. That's what I was telling her about today, John, where I walked pork chop. And the fact they didn't, again, Energy Bus is not a peer-reviewed journal, right? But they allude to studies being done that say you cannot be stressed at the same time you are feeling gratitude, right? So whenever you're stressed out, start telling yourself all the things that are going on good, the good things in your life, and see if you're still stressed. Because I do it now, and I'm like, oh, got stressed today. And do you have your wallet? Fuck, no, I don't have my wallet.
As we're getting in the car to leave.
As we're getting in the car. So I'm walking up to the house, stomping to go get my wallet. And I go, you know what, man? It's good because I'm thankful this happened because I got to say goodbye to Pork Chop again.
Yep.
Because Pork Chop was looking sad as we were leaving. So I was like, I'm gonna do some gratitude here. I'm thankful I get to see Pork Chop. And then I pet his face and he had dirt slobber because he'd been outside on it. So I wiped it back on him. I said, you know, I'm so thankful I got to say goodbye. And literally 20 seconds later, I didn't care that I forgot my wallet. Very tiny, insignificant, inconsequential thing. But you get in the habit of doing these things, of driving your own bus, of being in charge of it, and you can change your scenario, man. So I am lovey face to you for recommending it to me, because I think it's a great read, and I'm really excited about it right now. I'm taking my notes on it too. So
where did we leave off?
So we left off on fiction.
Oh.
On fiction. We had a little derail here, but I like it because everybody's got some good stuff to say about books. Fiction, Kelly. Let me drop you my thoughts on fiction.
We should have warned you this was going to be like an hour and a half long section. Oops.
Fiction. Oh, back to Energy Bus.
What?
This is my fun thing I like to do. So,
what are you looking for?
I need a pen. Okay, this is going to be gross.
We'll figure it out.
This is going to be gross. I'm going to do this with a screwdriver. So, Energy Bus. Talking about the power of perception, and you can't be upset while you're being grateful for things.
Oh, don't use that.
Then give me a pen.
Go get a pen.
The body and the brain and everything is connected. That's fine. Everything's connected emotionally, right? And they talk about a couple things, like when you're in an argument with your spouse, you should get naked, right? Because who's going to fight when you're naked? Well, I think we've disproved that, right? You can still argue when you're naked. But one thing they say to do whenever you're feeling bummed or whatever is just smile. Just simply smile, right? And put a good little smile on your face, right? Because the act of smiling changes your brain chemistry. It releases different endorphins. It makes you feel different. That is actually shaping your reality, right? By shifting your perception. Tony Robbins talks about changing your state. Change your state. Change your life. You know, get hyped up. He says yes is the most powerful word. So when he's getting hyped up, he'll just yes, yes, yes. And it does. It changes your state. You start yelling yes, you're going to start smiling. You're going to, just like this, man, I've changed my state. I'm amped right now. Someone sends me one of them check-ins that I don't want to. Yes, yes, I'm happy. But some people feel weird about it. So, clinically proven, citation never, if you don't want to smile, you can just put a pencil in your mouth, just like this. Can you hear it? It forces you to smile, whether you want to or not. You don't want to smile, no problem. Because you're smiling when you do it. You're stuck smiling when you do it. So a lot of people don't like this woo-woo self-help stupid shit. And that's cool, man. You can deny brain chemistry all you want. Don't have to smile. Just... and do that for 15 seconds and see if things don't change. See if you don't start feeling better, feeling different. And that's what I like about actionable things, is because you don't have to smile if you don't want to. Put the pencil in your mouth. Anytime you get pissed off, put a pencil in your mouth. This way. Just don't do it that. That's not going to help you smile. It's just not good. So these are things that I think are really, really awesome. And if you're on Finn Live, you're just going to have to try to search for this one. You missed it. So again, I like these actionable things. And that's why, like, I think Energy Bus resonates, is because it does. It throws you some little tips in there. It shows you how you can do these things. So it's good. So moving back to fiction, I will tell you straight up, I am a fantasy person. It's been this way since playing Dungeons and Dragons as a kid. Sci-fi, I'm not into it as much, but I am huge into fantasy. And so the series I'm reading right now, it's amazing because it's probably going to take me the next decade to finish. I don't even know how many books are in it. I think like 13, and they're all the size of a phone book. But it's the Wheel of Time series by Robert Jordan. And this series actually took so long for Robert Jordan, which is a pen name, by the way, I found out today. It actually took him so long to write that he died before finishing it. So I'm not laughing at the guy. But he died before finishing it, and a fan, another author, had to actually come in from his notes and finish the series because people were going to lose their minds if this series didn't conclude. Like, I mean, you probably would have had like a bunch of people like hurting themselves. It was that influential and instrumental. And the thing is it's just such an easy read that you think it's not that good until you start thinking of everything you know about every character and everything about the mythos and the layers of details you know and the vernacular and the geography, and you realize like, it's not flashy language, it's not flowy, it's not anything whatever, but you just realize the story and the layers this guy was able to paint when you go, oh my God, I remember that, but that was literally 3,000 pages ago and I can remember that being said. It's just, it's unlike a lot of other books to me. So I am really, really digging that, so much so that I'm not reading anything else. I am just gonna hammer down and finish Wheel of Time until it's done. But you name it, you know, whether it's Tolkien or whether it's Game of Thrones, you know, all these things, I'm huge into it. One of the books I read that literally shaped my life and changed a lot for me was, I remember going to the used bookstore with my mom and getting an old paperback of A Forgotten Realms, Dungeons and Dragons, a book about a dark elf named Drizdo Erden. It's a guy named R.A. Salvatore that wrote these books. And it was really, really impressionable to me because it was about an anti-hero. It was about a guy, he's a dark elf, which I don't expect everybody to be a nerd like I am, but they're a subterranean elf, right? They don't see the light of day, and they're notoriously known for being assassins and evil. And he wasn't. You know, he's a good dude, man. So he somehow, you know, stars aligned and was able to desensitize himself to light and can kind of walk in the sun a little bit, and he ends up finding these people and denies his whole race and background and whatever, judgment-free. I read a lot of R.A. Salvatore when I was a kid, and it really did set me up on this kind of anti-hero kind of pathway where, you know, man, you can do what you want to do. You can defy your expectations. You guys will see that as a theme for me. Super into all like the weird dystopian stuff. Fahrenheit 451, Animal Farm, Orwell, 1984, Atlas Shrugged. What is what I'm thinking about with the five prototypes, the alphas and the epsilons. Aldous Huxley.
Yeah.
Super into stuff like that too. Not sci-fi as much as dystopian. Because I kind of grew up on that punk rock side of things. So I'm always into that. I read a ton of Ayn Rand. which I love. I love for her language. I know a lot of people, Ayn Rand got some bad reps lately. Some of her personal ethical egoism and objectivism stuff is a little bit out there. And a lot of political climates have tried to push different books and agendas with that. But I just thought it was great. Great fiction in terms of, like, The Fountainhead is my favorite book. Because, again, you got O'Howard Rourke, an architect, saying, fuck you, I'm going to do things my way. And that's kind of a theme for me, right? So her language, her gift with words, really, really influential to me. Plus, she's kind of a badass in her day. Whatever. So I like that stuff. But yeah, fiction for me, I mean, I'll read the Sookie Stackhouse series, man. I'll watch some True Blood. I'll read those books, too. Couldn't hang with you guys on Twilight. That was just way too sophomoric for me.
The books were not great.
I tried reading 50 Shades, and that was terrible. I felt bad for all you people that thought that was some kinky shit. I was like, damn, y'all some vanilla homies, man. Y'all some vanilla homies if that's how you're rolling. But it was just written so bad, so poorly, like I couldn't imagine.
There's a couple, Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons as books,
yes,
are really fantastic.
I do like Dan Brown's books.
I'm a Harry Potter person.
I've never read Harry Potter.
I love all the Harry Potter books. I would read them ten times over.
I'll tell you what is good, and I may take some shit for this, the Hunger Games books.
Oh, no, those books are good.
The Hunger Games books are good. Yeah. I liked reading those. I'll read just about anything. But, man, if it's poorly written... Like, I'm kind of a word snob. Like, I really like language of a different era, I guess is the way to put it, man. Anne has to edit a lot of my stuff because I will write the way I speak, and there will be sentences that go on, but the way I'm saying it, you know, the pauses I'm putting in, not that I'm Christopher Walken, you know, I don't have a pause everywhere, but I just... You know, it's like you read Marcus Aurelius or you read Lincoln, you know, or you read all these people that were like great orators, you know, great speakers. I like that kind of language. That's why I like Ayn Rand so much. But when I read 50 Shades, yo, man, this is garbage. Like, how's she get a deal? Hey, props to you.
I couldn't make it through a couple pages.
Props to you, man. I'm glad you got that money. But that book was garbage. Garbage. And your hard lines, your hard nose, weak. Weak. So take that, 50 Shades. Yeah, Huxley. I wish I could... Huxley's the book. Damn book.
What is the name of that book, Kristen? Because I can't remember it.
Oh, it's gonna hit me when we're done, and I'm going to go live just to scream it. I'm thinking this is a vanilla 50 Shades reference.
What?
I'm thinking that's what Meg's laughing about. Right? Kim said, I'm all about fiction. I've been on some historical fiction lately. J.R. Ward, Black Dagger Brotherhood is fantasy. Cool. It's so good. Listen, in about 5 years when I finish Wheel of Time, because it is massive. Like my buddy Matt used to talk about Wheel of Time. And it's a book that helped him through difficult stuff as a kid. And he's read the entire series, I think, 3 times. And literally, like, if I put it on the shelf, it looked like the Encyclopedia Britannica on a shelf. It's huge. He had it in the bookshelf when Matt and I were roommates. He's like, Wheel of Time series. It had its own shelf. When I get done with this, I'll be looking for something new faux show.
Brave New World.
Brave New World.
Hey, and you just hit it. There you go.
Kristen just dropped it. Yep. Brave New World. Yeah, go. Man, the Alphas and the Epsilons, man. I thought that was really cool because Brave New World was awesome because it literally stratified class. There's a caste system. You were an Alpha all the way through to an Epsilon. And each one of them thought they were the best. So it wasn't like, you know, say the Alphas were the intellectual elite, the erudites, and let's say the Epsilons were the people that picked up trash, right?
Yeah, workers.
The people that picked up trash thought they were responsible for society going round and round, and they were the best.
Because they were raised and told, you are what keeps this world running. You are what keeps everybody safe and clean. And
through the entire caste system, it was that way until until someone started asking questions. And that's when your dystopian society gets revealed and unraveled and all the good stuff happens. But yeah, Brave New World was awesome.
So I wonder if it's still, is it still required reading?
It does rule.
In school, because being Brave New World, Fahrenheit 451, those were all required reading for me. I can't imagine it would be anymore because that's a little controversial. But
who knows, man? You ain't got to burn the books, you just remove them.
I learned a lot.
That's how that works. So fiction, man, that's about it for me. Like I said, I'm huge into fantasy, but I'll read anything. If it's good, I'll read it. If it's well written, I'll read it. If it sucks, that's a hell no, man. I can't. You know, I did not make it past the first 50 Shades. I kept waiting for it to get good, right? And it just didn't. I was like, yo, this is weak, man. Let me get on and read some Harry Potter fan fiction or something, man. I can find something steamier than this, right? So that's where I'm at on fiction. Always down to talk fiction stuff, but I am admittedly a fantasy guy. Conan, you know, give me a barbarian before I get a spaceman any day. And nutrition. I'm gonna make this one simple because yep. Ann's mad at me. Maybe we'll pick up nutrition books later.
Yeah, because talking about nutrition books and the why behind what he's going to say could be another, like, I mean, we could go on for a while about why.
Yeah, yeah. So
It needs to be its own topic.
I'm gonna try to keep it short and sweet. When it comes to reading books on nutrition, textbooks, that's the book you should read on nutrition. It's a textbook. The two we linked in our Fin Faves in the repository are the two that I've read and the two that I'll recommend to you. Because you have to understand that anything else you're going to read that's not primary literature is you're accepting the author's point of view and their opinion. And if they're writing a book that showcases their opinion, because if it wasn't an opinion, I understand it would be primary literature, right? It'd be textbook. If they're interjecting an opinion, then there's an agenda behind it. And if there's an agenda behind it, it's no longer unbiased. That is why I will not recommend nutrition books. Because if you want to know about nutrition, everything we know now is out there. And everything that's actually considered to be the closest thing to a fact that science will allow, because there are no facts in science. This is what we know up to this point. All of our research points to this. It could be wrong, but right now we have 482,000 things saying yes. So we're going to say that's okay. Everything we have that we know, which is not something you say in science, is found in primary literature. So that's where your answers are. That's where your answers are found. They're found in textbooks. Textbooks aren't fun to read, but that's why the hard sciences, it's one of the reasons they're called the hard sciences, because they're hard. The real reason they're called the hard sciences is because they're based using scientific method and rigor in order to make sure they remain unbiased. Math, geology, biology, physics, these are the hard sciences. And if you want to know about nutrition, you want to understand biology and anatomy and physiology. And those don't have a lot of opinions into how things function and process. There's a lot we don't know. That's what science is for. Science is here to discover these things, to find out where anecdote lines up with evidence. And that's why when people tell me they want to learn about nutrition or they want to know the science of things, I say, fantastic, that's easy. Go to school. Go to community college. You know, because it all depends on what your base level of knowledge is, your foundational level of knowledge. Do you have the foundation to carry on in the conversation? And when you read a 200, 300, 400 level textbook, you may go, whoa, I don't have the foundational knowledge to understand this. 5 pages into those books, you'll know. Ooh.
You do or you don't.
You do or you don't. And if you don't, great. Peel it back to where you do. So many resources out there, whether it's Khan Academy, whether it's YouTube, whether it's community college, whether it's getting your kid's science book,
yeah,
and learning chemistry and learning these things. That is how you learn about nutrition, because once you know how the body works, how the pathways from through the alimentary canal, how they actually work and absorb and circulate, then you can kind of see through the BS. You can understand the TikTok that says lettuce water helps you lose weight. Maybe isn't exactly all there, because what in the shit?
I was today years old when I learned about lettuce
water. Right. And then when you follow it up and you read the study, if you've been trained on how to interpret scientific studies and literatures and see how they were conducted and gauge the methodology and was it done with rigor? Was it double blind? How was it conducted? Was it a food frequency questionnaire? Was it in a metabolic ward? Has it been, you know, duplicated or reproduced? When you read the study and you go, whoa, that is not what you did on TikTok. You've got the foundational knowledge to call bullshit. And then you move on and you don't worry about it. And you don't get caught by it works. And you don't get caught by prove it. You don't get caught by, you know, all these other things. Because you just go, man, I don't know. That doesn't seem like it lines up with these hundreds of years of biological information. It sounds good. I like it. It's a cool title. Whoever wrote that ad copy was the jam. But it's not jiving with foundational knowledge. So if you want to learn about nutrition, you get textbooks. You get primary literature. That is where you learn about nutrition. What I think happens when most people say they want to learn about nutrition is they're asking how they become a coach or how they coach themselves. And I will tell you this. Seven years in of doing this and over six of doing this professionally and full time, I'm not a scientist. But I was told by a scientist who recommended textbooks to me that I'm the only person he knows that ever read one cover to cover, because it's a reference material. It's course level. Anyone outside of a course read it cover to cover. I think I got a little bit of edge on the average bear when it comes to science. You know, having an A&P degree and a paramedic background, you know, so we know how air goes in and out and blood goes round and round. I read about the Krebs cycle 800 times. I actively read peer-reviewed literature. I continuously engage in continuous education. I think I know a little bit more than the average bear when it comes to science. And I'm no closer to coaching myself than I was when I got fat doing it on my own before. I don't have a coach. I have three coaches. So when it comes to that, we got to ask what the answer is. Do you really want to know how the pancreas works, or do you want to look better in a bathing suit? Do you really want to, you know, be able to literally write down, you know, what stage pruvate gets converted in a Krebs cycle? Or do you want to help other people improve their lives? What are the answers? And if the answer truly is, I really like science because I want to be able to mow my own lawn with nutrition, then I'm going to suggest you deep dive into psychology, because you are going to be psychoanalyzing yourself. And that is very, very difficult. I can't do it. I won't do it for her because I'm too emotionally attached to her. I don't coach her. She can't do it for her.
No.
I think the people that pull it off effectively well are what some people would call sociopaths, because they can literally dissociate and they can treat themselves as a subject. That's not me. Seven years. That's not me. I don't bother. But if that's the goal, right, I would suggest deep diving heavy into digging in your own shit, like Meg pointed out, right? Because that's going to be unrooting all the reasons why you don't do the right thing all the time. And man, that's tough, right? Because this brain is really good at convincing ourselves that what we want to do in the moment is the right thing. We got all kinds of tools to use for it. And so that's what I think sometimes comes up. People that love science generally have a science background. They loved it so much they went to school for 8 to 10 years for it. I'll tell you this, it's not fun. We hang out with a couple PhDs when they come in town, and we don't talk about the Krebs cycle. We talk about jujitsu and dogs. And it's just one of those things where it's like, it's not super exciting. You know, when people are really, really excited and motivated by science, it's because they want to add to the body of work. They want to contribute to it. They want to be like Newton, right?
They want to be researchers.
And that's a totally different thing. So for me, it's what's the answer? What do you want to learn about when it comes to nutrition? If it's science, fantastic. That is a very easy pathway. They've got all the way to doctorate to where you can learn about science, specialized in nutrition, you know, anatomy and physiology geared towards human nutrition. That is where I'm going to steer you, because that is where the closest thing we have to truth and facts lie. Every other book, even if I wrote a book, it's my opinion. It's the N equals one times 1,000 that we've ran through the entire time this entire team has been coaching together. It's a collection of that evidence. But understand, that's subject to all kinds of human error. Yeah. And what we did 4 years ago, 4 months ago, 4 weeks ago is different because we're adding onto that body. So in a short period of time, my opinion can and will change. And the methods we use to collect information are subject to error. And that's what my opinion's based on, right? It's all up to you guys to give us the best information so we can make the best decisions. You can see how there's error in this loop. So if I write a book based on our experiences one day, it's my opinion. Don't get it to think it's the nutritional holy grail. Get a textbook, because that's the best we know. And that's why I don't recommend nutrition books. Do I read them every so often when they come out? Yeah, if they're from credible people. What do I mean by credible people? Researchers. People that have the alphabet soup after their name. But even then, man, there's some doctors out there slinging some bullshit. So, you know, that's it. So I don't know if that helped or hurt things worse or whatever it was, but that's what I got when it comes to books. And oh my Lord, we have been on this live for a while. Now I know you've been poking me. I really wish you would have cut this off sooner and been more supportive.
Listen, guys, I did what I can.
I wish you'd have been more supportive. Guys, I don't think you'll have anything for this free-for-all, but if you do, now's the time. Thanks for the great questions. Jillian, when you watch this on the replay, I hope you've made it this far to hear. Thank you for that one. I think being supportive, I think that's the biggest part of being a power couple. Just don't be a dick. Don't do the wrong thing. And Kelly, I think you got way more than you wanted from this one. And sorry, I like books. That's all I got. So guys, thank you for hanging out with us. Thanks for being awesome. Thanks for dealing with all that.
Yeah.
And if you have any more questions or want to get on them books, let me know. You guys are awesome, man. Thanks for bearing with us. Kelly said, thanks so much for answering and sharing so much. It was a lot. Thank you for bearing with us. I appreciate you more than you know.
Thank you for hanging.
Thank you. Thank you for being awesome. Thanks, you guys, for spending some of your Friday with us. And thanks for being first in. Take care. Have a great one. And we'll see you soon. Bye.